Blog Talk Radio.
Shirt on, and I'm just realizing now I should have done it with a black coat because that's Halloweeny. Halloweeny. Oh, in my head it wouldn't have sounded as silly as it actually did. Yeah, but you know what? I said this recently. It doesn't feel like it's around Halloween because it's been warm where I am. So, you know, usually it cools off pretty significantly before Halloween, but just feels like we're still, like, in the summer. So, but anyway, random side note. A lot of stuff to get to today. Donald Trump takes that hatchet to Obamacare. We knew he was going to do it, but now it's official. He wants to back out of Puerto Rico, even though the facts on the ground are absolutely abysmal. Rush Limbaugh actually breaks with Donald Trump on something. I'll explain to you what that is. And then later on in the show, the Kentucky governor, I believe his name is Matt Bevin, he thinks that people are overdosing on marijuana. Okay, I know all of you guys know this, but that's not a thing. That is not a thing that exists in the world. But that's what he fears. He fears that people are going to overdose on marijuana. So sad is all I have to say about that. All right, let's get started. I see I'm missing a story here. I'm supposed to have 10, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, classic Kyle move. I'm supposed to have 10, and I don't. So I got to see which one is missing. I'll try to do that during the first break. I'm so organized here, aren't I? Okay, let's get started, and we'll do that with the Obamacare story. So I've been warning you about this for a while, and now it's here. Foiled in Congress, Trump signs order to undermine Obamacare. It's not just undermining it. He actually is doing a series of executive orders, and it's a stake through the heart of Obamacare. So let me show you exactly what I mean. President Trump signed an executive order on Thursday that clears the way for potentially sweeping changes to the country's health insurance system, including sales of cheaper policies with fewer benefits and protections for consumers than those mandated under the Affordable Care Act. The president's plan, a 1,100-word directive to federal agencies, laid the groundwork for an expanding array of health insurance products, mainly less comprehensive plans offered through associations of small employers, and greater use of short-term medical coverage. It was the first time since efforts to repeal the landmark health law collapsed in Congress that Mr. Trump has set forth his vision of how to remake the nation's healthcare system using the powers of the executive branch. It immediately touched off a furious debate over whether the move would fatally destabilize the Affordable Care Act marketplaces or add welcome options to consumers complaining of high premiums and not enough choice. Okay, so let's be clear about something here in regards to that last sentence. That's not a thing that exists. People, I wish I had more choice. What does that mean? We're talking about health insurance. You know, this is as far as health insurance should go. You just got sick. We're going to give you help. Full stop. the idea that we treat this like it's just some sort of standard consumer good and it's not in its own category is beyond preposterous. Because that's the way it should work. Oh, you're sick? Here's the help that you need, and then we move forward. But no, these guys really believe, well, we can have different tiers. Hey, what kind of coverage do you want? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? So if I break my leg, oh, you only cover half of it. But if I have a heart attack, you cover all of it in theory. But if I have this other thing, then it's just a copay or whatever. No. Like, that's not a thing. When people get sick, they just want help. And they've been paying into their health insurance, and they don't want to get screwed over. That's all it is. But they frame it like, oh, you know, people are complaining about high premiums and not enough choice. Nobody does that. Nobody does that. So basically, to sum up what this move is, it allows small businesses and allows little groups of people, if they come together, to then, in theory, negotiate with the health insurance companies and to make their own plans. Now, here's the problem with it. This is just an attempt to get around every single rule and regulation laid out under Obamacare. So in other words, if you form your little group and you want to go to the health insurance company, well, now all of a sudden they can say, well, we don't cover pre-existing conditions anymore. Why? Because under Trump's executive order, you can have the health insurance companies don't have to abide by the rules and regulations under Obamacare for these groups if they decide to work with the health insurance companies. Furthermore, as they alluded to, it's the return of the catastrophic coverage plans. So in other words, those were banned because they were just scams. So what would happen is the health insurance company would say, oh, don't worry, we have these really affordable, cheap plans for you if you're interested in them. So if you're a young person, for example, and you're relatively healthy and you feel like, well, I don't really need, I'm young, I'm healthy, it doesn't really matter, so let me get the cheapest option possible. Well, you know, you can pay, hey, pay $100 a month and you get catastrophic coverage, which basically means it covers nothing except if you're about to die. In which case, under that circumstance, it covers some of the stuff, but not all the stuff, and you're still probably going to go broke. So, and the reason why those were banned is because, you know, when you do an analysis of it, you find out they're fucking scams. It doesn't really cover anything. You're going to go bankrupt if you get sick and you're about to die. And if you don't get sick and you're not about to die, then it's going to cost an arm and a leg to get anything done. So it's basically a way of saying, hey, you're covered with health insurance even though you're not covered with health insurance. And it's like you're paying a mafia. Like, here's $100 a month. Now fuck off. So Obamacare steps in and goes, no, we're going to make the health insurance companies cover, more than just catastrophic care because this isn't – they're not covering anything. You're paying them and they're not covering anything. So Obamacare says no more catastrophic plans. Hey, what if you still ended up paying $100 a month? Maybe the cost was $200, but then you get a $100 subsidy each month. What if you ended up paying $100 a month and you had more than just catastrophic care? You had regular care. You had a decent amount of care. So that's what Obamacare did. Trump is stepping in with his executive order and going, no, bring back the catastrophic coverage plans and make it so that people can now, again, pay a smaller amount to the health insurance companies but get nothing in return. So bring back the scam. And they do it under the guise of, it's choice. It's more choice. You know, you have more choice. You can choose to pay the health insurance companies and then have them fuck you over whenever you actually get sick and you need them. That's what this is. So it's not subtle. This is not subtle. This is just a hatchet to Obamacare, and it's a way of doing legislation without going through Congress. So it's him saying, yeah, we're going to allow health insurance companies and other groups of people to make their own deals, and oh, would you look at that, you're exempt from every rule under Obamacare when you make your own deal with them. Okay, but it gets worse because another thing he's doing is axing some key Obamacare subsidies, and he's doing it, again, through executive orders. So the subsidies, for those of you who don't understand how that works, so you have the exchanges, which is under Obamacare, you have all the different health insurance companies in the different markets in each state. They go on this exchange, and they have to list their prices next to each other. Okay, this is how much it costs to get a plan from Blue Cross Blue Shield. This is how much it costs to get a plan from Aetna. This is how much it costs to get a plan from whatever. You name the insurance company. So you have them listed. It has the prices, and then you pick. And then if you're under a certain income threshold, you get a subsidy, which helps you pay for some of your health insurance. So I don't know exactly the way where the lines are. I think it varies by state, and I don't know how much each person gets. But, you know, suffice to say, if you make 30 grand a year, 40 grand a year, and you want to buy health insurance, you go to the exchanges, you pick out your health insurance, and then, you know, they say, okay, this plan costs $400 a month, but you're going to get $150 subsidy, let's say, each month to help you pay for it. Well, that fucking helps a lot of people out. And this is one of the reasons why, apart from the Medicaid expansion, which covered many more people, but this is one of the reasons why Obamacare added tens of millions of people under insurance. Now, again, it's not perfect because you still have, you know, millions of people who don't have insurance, which is why the answer is Medicare for all, clearly. But it was a giant step in the right direction. So now what Trump is saying is, no, we're going to get rid of those subsidies. So now the person who makes 30 grand a year or 40 grand a year, who gets that extra $150 a month as a subsidy to help pay for their health insurance, now no more. What happened? I'm looking out for the little guy. The forgotten man will never be forgotten again. This is the exact opposite. You're spitting in the eye of middle-class people and poor people who can't afford to pay for their health insurance. That government subsidy put them over the top where they could barely afford their health insurance. And now you're saying, no, fuck that. We're getting rid of that. Why? Because it's Obamacare. I don't like Obamacare, and we're going to get rid of that. And then, by the way, what are the effects of this? According to the CBO, axing the subsidies would lead to 1 million more people uninsured and a premium spike of up to 20%. Guys, I say this to you every single time. Every single time. The Republicans keep crafting health insurance reforms that literally, objectively, are not a step in the right direction, they're a step in the wrong direction. So it's not about, hey, let's make it work more for the American people, cover more people, let's make it cheaper. It's not about any of that, because if it was about that, he wouldn't have done this. So what it's really about, in the case of Trump with his dumbass executive orders here, is it's about being a wrecking ball for every single thing Obama did. I mean, that's what this is. He pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Who the fuck does that? Well, you do it if you want to say fuck you to everything your predecessor did. He's pulling out of the Iran deal. Which, by the way, we are so totally fucked as a result of that. I mean, that's a different segment for a different day, but he's pulling out of the Iran deal, done with the Paris Climate Agreement, now absolutely wrecking Obamacare. So you guys know me. I said a million times over, Obama is a giant mixed bag. Some things he did are horrendous and status quo and business as usual and it's sellout 101. But other things he did are decent. The things that are decent include Obamacare and fucking the Paris Climate Agreement and the Iran deal. And Trump's saying, nope, we're getting rid of all that. He's trying to erase everything Obama did, and then he's going to go to the electorate like a fucking dog that just ate a raccoon and snapped its neck. And you know how the dog will put the dead animal by your feet if you're the owner and go like, see what I did, Daddy? Like, oh, I killed the fucking thing, see? That's what Trump's going to do with every single thing Obama did. But guess what? Obama's got like a 60% approval rating at this point. Trump's got a fucking 32% approval rating. You destroying everything he did ain't going to work out for you like you think it is. But, I mean, he is super serving his base, that's for sure. The people on the far right base who really put Trump over the edge and said, yep, look, we're gonna get this guy in there. Well, they're getting exactly what the fuck they bargained for. Well, what people are finding out is it's not as simple as just to get rid of Obamacare, fucking, you know, get rid of the Iran deal. No, if you get rid of Obamacare without replacing it with Medicare for All, then you send the fucking health insurance marketplace into a tailspin and everything gets worse. If you get rid of the Iran deal, you throw the Middle East into further turmoil and you make it more likely that Iran is going to get a nuke, not less likely. So all of this fucking far right-wing talking points that he used on the campaign trail, you know, that may have been appealing to a certain small percentage of the population, definitely a large percentage of the Republican Party in the base, but that's not, the American people are going, fuck you, because there's real-world consequences to this shit. So I would say somebody's got to reel him in, Trump, but he's unreelable. You know, what are you going to do? What are you going to have fucking General Kelly? So, Mr. Trump, I don't think you could do that. There was an article that said, it came out, I think, last night, and it said that whenever those guys do try to talk Trump off the ledge for some of these extreme measures, he loses it, and he throws a temper tantrum. So, okay, well, there you go. More people are going to be uninsured. Premiums are going to spike. We're going to be in a worse situation in the Middle East. He's just ruining everything. So, wowzers. There you go. We need strong, principled Democrats more than ever who will fight for Medicare for all and free college and a living wage and who will stop the draconian backslide we're doing here into a worse situation. Okay. Next. You guys are going to like this one. Oh, President Trump just started backpedaling from continuing to help Puerto Rico after they got obliterated by two Category 5 hurricanes in a very small time frame. So he said this, Puerto Rico survived the hurricanes, by the way, bottom up, because that's how this was on Twitter. Puerto Rico survived the hurricanes, now a financial crisis looms largely of their own making, says Cheryl Atkinson. A total lack of accountability, say the governor. Electric and all infrastructure was disaster before hurricanes. Congress to decide how much to spend. We cannot keep FEMA, the military, and the first responders who have been amazing under the most difficult circumstances in Puerto Rico forever. He says this, okay, as the death count right now is over 100 and going up. He says this as there's still over 100 people missing and as 84% of the island still doesn't have electricity. Think about that number. 84% of Puerto Rico still does not have electricity. The hurricane was a fucking long time ago now. 84% of the island, 84% doesn't have electricity. So if people are still sitting in the fucking dark waiting for necessary supplies, and as the death count is undoubtedly ticking up in a U.S. territory, Trump is talking about pull yourself up by your bootstraps. He's talking about get on your own 2 feet. Paul Ryan said that as well. Unbelievable. Guys, compare this, what they're saying about this, with some of the other policies that they're in favor of. You know, Paul Ryan voted for the Wall Street bailout, the big bank bailout. And then when they went on to pay bonuses to the same people who crashed their companies, Paul Ryan defended those companies. So Paul Ryan, blank check to bail out Wall Street and big banks who continually fuck over the American people. But we got to get out of Puerto Rico, though. I mean, what are we going to do, stay there forever? 84% of the island still doesn't have fucking electricity, and it's a U.S. territory, and you're talking about getting out of there? Donald Trump, same thing. We can't stay there forever. Well, I mean, what are we going to do? We cannot keep the military and first responders in PR forever. Weird, because you now have the exact opposite position on Afghanistan. Apparently, we could stay in Afghanistan and build fucking Kabul and Kandahar from the ground up, even though they're not a U.S. territory, and continue an endless war. We can stay there forever, but to help people in a U.S. territory, no, we can't. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We don't have the money. We don't have the money to help people in Puerto Rico who are struggling, U.S. territory. We don't have the money to help them. But we do have, you know, an extra $100 billion to add an increase in our military budget. Look, man, I don't know. Look, I'm just saying it. I don't know how anybody can come to a different conclusion than this is clearly an extension of his bigotry. Because, you know, he never says this about Florida or Texas. He wouldn't say that about them. But Puerto Rico, now you could say, well, there's a little distinction because Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, and, you know, Florida and Texas, they're states, so it's a little different. But listen, if you're going to have the administration and Donald Trump and guys like Paul Ryan say, yes, endless war in fucking Afghanistan and spend all the money you want to fucking militarily obliterate a country, and again, keep it real, it's more about jacking natural resources and it's more about keeping the status quo as it is and the U.S. being the only sole superpower on the planet and yada, yada, yada. But if you can say endless war, blank check, but to help people in a U.S. territory, we got to get out now, well, then what? It probably has something to do with the fact that the people in Puerto Rico don't quite look like the people in Florida and Texas. And at this point, you know, it's not a giant leap of logic when you look at everything else he's had on the campaign trail. When you look at the ban all Muslims, total and complete shutdown of Muslims coming to the U.S. When you look at a nationwide stop and frisk is what we need. Nationwide stop and frisk. The Mexicans, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people.
I don't think
it's like it's him doing it on purpose. I just think he's a really old white dude who's kind of internalized these things and doesn't realize it. And so he thinks, like, yeah, Puerto Rico, it was pretty much their fault anyway. I mean, they had a shitty system before, so what are we going to do? What, am I going to spend money to help them? He doesn't feel that same kinship with people in Puerto Rico as he does with people in Texas. So, oh, and also, how's this for a stunning fact? Stunning fact. There's a $5 billion relief package that's being sent to Puerto Rico. Okay, so you go, oh, what do you mean? That's good enough. See, he's helping those people. The relief package is loans, not grants. So Puerto Rico already has a debt crisis, and they were scammed by Wall Street, mind you. So they already have a debt problem, and now the solution is they're going, oh, send them more debt. Give them loans, not grants. U.S. territory destroyed after natural disasters. Oh, no, we're not just going to rebuild and do the right thing. No, we're going to loan them more money, and then they'll have to pay us back. Wow, man, that's fucking ridiculous. And listen, there's been a few articles about this, and hey, facts are facts, right? How Cuba's responded and rebounded after these hurricanes versus Puerto Rico? Well, one of those places is a U.S. territory, and it's supposed to have the backing of the world's richest country. The other place is an isolated, you know, communist island. You would think, well, come on. Obviously, the U.S. territory is going to rebound faster. They had similar damage, got fucking hammered by two hurricanes. Guess which one is bouncing back faster? Yeah, the one that it's not politically correct to say. Okay. All right, should I take a break now? You know what? Yes, let me take a break now, and then as I'm taking a break, I'm going to find out which story I'm missing, because I'm missing a story here, and I don't know why. But all right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with Trump goes on Hannity, and it is a fucking, I don't even know the word for it. We have to make up a word for it. It is a schmungog fest. That's what it is. You'll see what I mean by that. And then the U.S. pulls out of a U.N. agency. Uh-oh. Wait until you find out why. Stay right there. Thank you.
the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will face so
much. Son, bitch. All right, we're back.
I feel like I'm the last real nigga left.
Okay. Donald Trump went on Hannity this week, and he engaged in a wrestling match with the English language and a wrestling match with logic. So here's what he said about the economy and the national debt. The country, we took it over and owed over $20 trillion. As you know, the last 8 years, they borrowed more than it did in the whole history of our country. So they borrowed more than $10 trillion, right? And yet, we picked up $5.2 trillion in the stock market. Possibly picked up the whole thing in terms of the first 9 months in terms of value. So you could say, in one sense, we're really increasing values, and maybe, in a sense, we're reducing debt, but we're very honored by it. Okay, so he's saying, oh, we have like $20 trillion in debt, but, you know, the stock market is worth like $5.2 trillion. We picked up $5.2 trillion in just the stock market. So you could say we picked up the whole thing in terms of value. So in one sense, we're really increasing values and reducing debt. No, you cannot, because that isn't even close to how the economy works. So when you have the stock market pick up value, you know who that's good for? Corporations. Corporations and their shareholders. So the stock market, and this is a point I've made a zillion times over, the stock market is not a good reflection of how middle-class people are doing and poor people are doing, and it's not a good reflection of how 95% of the American people are doing. It's a good reflection of maybe the top 5%, but not a good reflection of 95%. So when you say, oh, the stock market, tremendous, unbelievable, doing so well, and you can say, in a sense, we've reduced the debt tremendously. No, you can't, which is why the debt is still like $20 trillion, and the stock market, which is totally separate, is at record highs. And by the way, the Republicans love to use the stock market as an indicator only when they're in office and it's doing well. You'll find out whenever it crashes, all of a sudden they'll turn around and he'll say, no, it's not, no, it wasn't me, I didn't do it. But under Obama, for example, the stock market grew massively. It doubled from what he inherited. So you would think that they would say, Obama was good with the stock market, you got to give him that. But no, they don't say that, because that standard only applies to them. Is the stock market doing well? Yes. Is it doing well under me? Yes. Well, then let's talk about the stock market. Is it doing poorly under me? Yes. Well, then don't talk about it. Is it doing well under a Democrat? Well, then don't talk about it. And let's, again, be clear that I never said during Obama that, oh, the stock market is a good indicator of how well the economy is doing, because it's not. It just isn't. But he's taking a measure of the wealth of corporations and saying, that's basically kind of like we eliminated or reduced the national debt. That is absolutely positively nothing like we eliminated the national debt. And then again, these guys are so goofy. So listen, man, if you want to say, hey, let's not run a deficit in a given year, that's something that I think is a reasonable position to take. And, you know, depending on the circumstance and how the actual economy is doing and whatnot, maybe that's a goal that's, something that should be desired or attempted to be attained, okay? But if you want to say, let's eliminate the national debt, that's not possible. That's not going to happen. Virtually every country on earth has a national debt. Okay, national debt, to have a national debt, that is the lifeblood of capitalism. So you need to run public deficits to get private surpluses. Again, this is not something that you hear for most people, but this is something that MMT economists have spoken about, and they're right. And even some Keynesians have pointed this out. They're right about that. So what are you going to do? How are you going to eliminate $20 trillion in debt? And you do realize if you were to attempt to do that, well, then you would have to fucking almost eliminate military spending. You have to absolutely obliterate and gut every social safety net program. So no, having a national debt is something, it's always going to be there. It ain't going anywhere. But virtually every country has a national debt. You can have a conversation about maybe not running a deficit in a given year, but the national debt, which is an accumulation of all the debt from the fucking inception of this country until now, you're not going to fucking be able to get rid of that. But again, the fucking deficit scolds or the debt scolds, these are people who, if you notice, they'll only whine and bitch and moan under Democratic presidents. Whenever it's under Republican presidents, all of a sudden, they have nothing to say about the debt and the deficit, and all of a sudden, tax cuts are a bigger priority. And of course, tax cuts would add more to the debt and the deficit. So tax cuts for the rich, yeah, that's a good idea. And again, that'll just explode the debt and the deficit even more. But funny how their concern for the debt and the deficit is gone whenever a Democrat's out of office and it's a Republican. And then watch. The next time a Democrat is elected, they'll turn around and go on day one and go, look at this fucking debt and deficit. This is unbelievable. So, you know, Democrats, you should fix this. So he just doesn't know anything. I mean, that's the bottom line here. He doesn't know anything. He's really going to – I mean, for fuck's sake, man. There are people in, like, middle school who can tell you that this is 100% wrong. There are people who all they took was one economics 101 class, and they go, you can't say that if the stock market has X amount, that somehow, or what's the word he used, increases values and in a sense reduces debt. No, it doesn't in any sense do that. He just makes shit up in his mind and runs with it. And it's amazing to me because wouldn't this be embarrassing? Like if you have any modicum of introspection, you know, if you're able to be even mildly self-critical, wouldn't you be embarrassed to say something like this? To just, you know, broadcast your ignorance to the world? But he's not. He doesn't feel that. And, okay, random side point, and this will be the final point in this story, but, you know, it's just another great example of this mentality. Trump, he loves to say, oh, how great at golf he is, and he makes other people go out there and say how great at golf he is. And what's amazing is his stories are just so preposterous that even, like, now just golf magazines are refuting them. Isn't that crazy? Like, you're saying things that are so ridiculous that people who aren't even supposed to be critical of you and who, to an extent, have recently been, you know, on your side because they say, oh, the golfer-in-chief, we have a president who loves golf and all that stuff. But now Golf Magazine was like, Trump just claimed to shoot 73 in rainy and windy conditions at a very difficult and long course. He really just claimed that. Meanwhile, fucking Hale Irwin, in his multiple rounds at that course on the Champions Tour, which is the senior tour, the golf senior tour, his average is over 73 on that course. If you're going to tell me a 71-year-old shot 73 in rainy and windy conditions on a long course, when one of the top senior golfers in the world averaged over 73 on that course. And then, you know, there's a litany of stories about how he's just the biggest fucking cheater in the world. There's some people who golf with him who say he'll literally pick up shots that are in the rough that are supposed to be chip shots. He's not even fucking putting. He'll pick it up and go, it's good. Tremendous. It's good. I understand for those of you who don't, like, know golf, you might think, whatever, this is a side point. No, but for people who know golf, the shamelessness it would take to do something like that. There's a fucking video of him driving his golf cart on a green. On a green. That's not... I've been playing golf my whole life. That's a level of disrespect and shamelessness I've never seen anywhere ever. Ever. You're not even supposed to drive your cart near the green, within like 50 yards of the green. Not only is he within 50 yards, his cart was on the fucking green. It was on the green. So this is a guy who, not only does he not know anything, he's also an epic liar on a whole nother level, where it's like he doesn't even realize the people that are with him are capable of independent thought and critically analyzing his action. So he's a liar on a whole nother level, and with stories like this, it just shows in a way where you really have to pause and reflect. It's almost like, you know, it's just in total awe and amazement that I read a quote like this. Because it's just broadcasting his ignorance, and he doesn't care, and he doesn't know. Because he could just craft his own reality in his own mind, and then everybody who's not part of that, he just dismisses. Like, oh, fake news. No, but what if they're right and you're wrong? What if they're right that is not at all how the national debt works, and you're wrong?
It's a fake news. I said it, so therefore it's true. Fake news. I shot 73.
Donald Trump has the swing of a guy who shoots fucking 90, and he's talking about he shoots 73. My ass cheeks, he shoots 73. I don't shoot 73, and I'm way better at golf than he is. So he's just such a liar, and it's so shameless, and he's able to put himself in his own mental bubble where he's so disconnected from the rest of the world that it really, it's, I stare at it in amazement. Like, I don't know how it's possible, but he does it. And that's also, by the way, why he's such a danger to the world. When you're that disconnected and disassociated from other people and their perception of you and the reality of what's going on, I mean, what you can do untold damage because you have a fucking military. You have, and this is why every time he goes out there and fucking prods Kim Jong-un with a stick, you think he understands the consequences of those actions? Do you think he gets what can happen in a hot war with North Korea and how Seoul, South Korea could be obliterated and we could have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of deaths as a result of this? Either he doesn't know, or he doesn't care, or he's so disconnected that it's just irrelevant to him. Oh, he's got to go. He's got to get out of office. We gotta defeat this guy, because this is really, it puts the planet in danger. Okay. Now, let's go to Rush Limbaugh. This is an interesting story.
Rush Limbaugh surprisingly broke with Donald Trump on the issue of the NFL protests. So let's listen, and then we'll come back and discuss.
I have to share one more thing with you. There's a part of this story that's starting to make me nervous. And it's this. I am very uncomfortable with the President of the United States being able to dictate the behavior and power, or the behavior and all of anybody. That's not where this should be coming from. Trump is continually tweeting, and I know what he's doing, and I understand why he's doing it, and his motives are pure, don't misunderstand. But I don't think that it is useful or helpful for any employee anywhere to be forced to do something because the government says they must. That scares the hell out of me. This should come from the league, as it looks like Goodell wants it to. This should be, owners should be demanding this, not the president. The commissioner should be demanding this, not the president. We don't want the president being able to demand anybody that he's unhappy with behave in a way he requires. That's scary to me, even if the president's somebody I happen to like. This is a workplace issue. It's the owners and the league that let this get out of hand because they didn't know how to deal with it or were afraid to. And if this is going to be made to work, the players are going to have to be told who the boss is, and they're going to have to be given specific workplace rules and regulations that they know has nothing to do with the Constitution, the First Amendment, freedom of speech. If you want to work for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you are going to stand for the anthem. If you want to work for the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to stand for the anthem. But I'm really nervous if all that happens because the president makes it happen. He can make it happen by forcing the owners. But this is a slippery slope to me, and it hit me a while ago and crystallized last night. Trump is in the right, don't misunderstand, but no president should have dictatorial power over individual behavior.
That was surprising. Listen, we've been doing this show for a long time, and when I tell you I don't think I've seen a single instance of Rush Limbaugh breaking with Republican orthodoxy, I mean it. Like, his whole thing is just I'm the rationalizer. You come to me for anything the Republicans are doing, and I will find a way to twist it and make an argument that, of course, the Republicans are right, and the big bad Democrats are the problem, and all that stuff. So that's been his whole MO for all these years. This might literally be the first time I've heard him, you know, basically take, and this isn't even a total rejection of Trump, because as you said, oh, I think he's right, but it's like a middle ground where he's like, I'm still uncomfortable with him telling the owners do X, Y, or Z. The owners should do X, Y, or Z, and he should not say anything because he's the president, even though he's right, according to Rush. So this one baffled me. I'm like, what? I don't understand it. But there are, I was going to say 2 points, but I think 3 points that need to be made here. The first one is, my speculation is that Rush might know some of the NFL owners. And, you know, as many other commentators have accurately pointed out, if there's one thing that these owners don't like being told, it's what to do. So, you know, it was one thing when Trump was shitting on everybody under the sun, shitting on Muslims, shitting on Mexicans, shitting on liberals, and calling for fucking torture and obliterating civilians with airstrikes. It was one thing when he was doing all that. But the second, he actually tells other rich people what to do. They're like, oh, whoa, how dare you? You don't tell us anything. And then they're all fucking kneeling in solidarity, as nobody's picking up Kaepernick, by the way. So, yeah, some solidarity you're showing. So that's my speculation, is that he probably knows some of the NFL owners, and so he's siding with his buddies over the other guy, over Trump. That's my speculation. But the another point to make about this is, imagine a situation where it was a liberal owner of a company, and they have conservative employees, and the liberal owner forces the conservative employees to stop doing a political protest that they want to do. All you can bet everything on it that Rush Limbaugh would take the opposite position. And he'd say, these conservative employees, they have a right to say what they want, and for the liberal owner to try to make them do X, Y, or Z, that's not right. But now, when it's more conservative owners, and it's people, you know, protesting because police brutality in the NFL, he goes, well, no, I mean, come on, the owner should put a stop to that. So, yes, he's still a hypocrite, because it still depends on what the issue is, how much he flips on, you know, what he tells them to do. And then the most important point here is, and this is why this is so baffling, him making these comments, is that, so Russia's like, you can't have a president just dictatorially say this or that. Yeah. Okay, but you literally spent years and years and years defending Bush when he ordered torture, which is a violation of the Geneva Conventions, the Nuremberg Tribunal, international law, the Constitution, the Eighth Amendment protection from cruel and unusual punishment. You defended a dictatorial order to do torture. You defended illegal wars. You defended mass surveillance, which is, of course, against the Fourth Amendment, protection from unreasonable search and seizure. So that's why this is so baffling. Like, you would think this is fucking easy for Limbaugh to just go out there and say, yeah, Trump's right, yeah, listen to the president, he's right, respect our flag, bro, yeah. But no, he didn't do that. So a president can't dictatorially order you to, you know, to stand for the anthem, but a president can dictatorially order torture and illegal wars and mass surveillance, according to Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, something's off here, which is why, that's why I'm telling you guys, I would be stunned if he didn't have NFL owner friends. And I'd also be stunned if they didn't literally call him and tell him, like, you want to say something about this, son. But I got bad news for those owners. Rush Limbaugh now has about 27 listeners. So you're not getting as much exposure as you think you are. Actually, that's not true. You are, because even though he has no, like, listeners, the mainstream media still covers him. Meanwhile, we're unquestionably bigger than he is now, and they would never cover us. So that does say something, doesn't it? Okay. Now, talk about the UN. The U.S. decided to throw a temper tantrum on the world stage in an embarrassing way. This report is from the Washington Post. United States will withdraw from UNESCO at the end of the year, the State Department said Thursday, to stop accumulating unpaid dues and make a stand on what it said is anti-Israel bias at the UN's Educational, Science, and Cultural Organization. In notifying UNESCO of the decision Thursday morning, the State Department said it would like to remain involved as a non-member observer state. All right, let me pause. Isn't that more like a self-own than anything else? Like, oh yeah, I disagree with the things you're doing, so I'm going to pull out of this thing and let you keep doing the things that I don't like and just watch. Why wouldn't you want to be involved and influence it? It just seems weird. Okay. They say that will allow the United States to engage in debates and activities, though it will lose its right to vote on issues. Again, self-owned. The withdrawal follows longstanding issues the U.S. has with UNESCO and does not necessarily foreshadow a further retrenchment of U.S. engagement with the United Nations, where the Trump administration has been pushing to bring about structural and financial reforms. This is pragmatic, not a grander political signal, said John MacArthur, a fellow of the Global Economy and Developmental Program at the Brookings Institution and an advisor to the United Nations Foundation. The most immediate impact is that the U.S. will halt the arrears it has run up since it stopped funding the organization in 2011 to protest UNESCO's admission of Palestine as a full member. By the end of this calendar year, the unpaid U.S. bill will amount to $550 million, with no sign that U.S. concerns would be addressed. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson decided to pull out after December 31, 2018, when the unpaid balance will top $600 million. Okay, pause again. So this is the United States bullying it. Hey, we'll pay you if you don't have Palestine be a member of UNESCO. If you do have them be a member of UNESCO, we're not paying. So in other words, let's not debate the merits of it. Let's not see who's right and who's wrong, why or why not, what are the merits of Palestine being in here versus not being in here. Don't worry about it. No, we're just going to hold the money over your head. So we disagree. We're giving him. Screw you guys, I'm giving him. That's what this is. The U.S. is Eric Cartman on the world stage. We don't like Palestine. We're giving him. The fuck is that? What is that? It's a bully is what it is. Oh, if you get rid of, we'll make you an offer. If you get rid of Palestine from the organization, maybe we give you some Gitas. Maybe we give you some of the green. It's like a mafia boss. And that kind of is almost exactly what it is. Okay, more. State Department officials said they hope the withdrawal will help push UNESCO to make changes that would satisfy Washington so the U.S. can resume full membership. It sends a strong message that we need to see fundamental reform in the organization, and it raises everyone's awareness about continued anti-Israel bias, said one official, speaking on condition of anonymity under Department ground rules. The United States helped found the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization after World War II, but has been at odds with it in recent years. State Department officials cited a 2012 decision not to expel Syria from its Human Rights Committee after the civil war in the country began, and repeated resolutions that refer to Israel as an occupying power. Oh my goodness. That's it. They call Israel an occupying power because it literally, under international law, is an occupying power. They didn't make it up. So, oh yeah, man, Israel. We're going to call them an occupier even though they're not. No. You know, they're in the West Bank. They have illegal settlements. They are beyond the borders, which are deemed, or according to international law, that are theirs. They keep taking Palestinian land. That is, by definition, occupation. These fucking snowflakes in the U.S. like, you're calling them an occupier. We can't have that. That's what we're going to pull out over that. I mean, again, it's bullying because it says to them, hey, get rid of Palestine, and then maybe we'll pay you. Maybe we'll give more money. So that's just holding money over their head and not debating the merits of the issue. And it's just you want them to lie. And I love how they say it sends a strong message that we need to see fundamental reform and raises everyone's awareness about continued anti-Israel bias. You're right. It raises everybody's awareness about Israel bias, but it's not anti-Israel bias. It's your pro-Israel bias. It's every other country somehow gets it, but the U.S. and Israel, and so, every now and then some of our other little bitch boy states who we force to vote the way we want them to. But every other country, every time you discuss this, okay, Israel, please stop occupying. Okay, let's make Palestine a state. Okay, let's, you know, let's fix this situation. But every time, the U.S. veto Corleone, veto. So everybody gets it, but you don't get it. Or you're just lying about it, which I think is probably more likely. So it's just, it's so fucking sick, man. We don't like that you point out objective facts about Israel. Therefore, we're going to pull out. We're going to take our ball and go home. And also, this to the Syria point, we can't believe you still have Syria here. You're going to, the United States is going to bitch about Syria being involved in this cultural organization when you're in favor of Saudi Arabia being on the human rights panel. No. www.shi.com. You don't get to make that argument. You don't get to make that argument. Because, as you know, you could say, oh, Syria, they're horrible and brutal and yada yada. However bad you say Syria is, Saudi Arabia is way worse. Way worse. Doing a fucking genocide in Yemen as we speak. Bombing women and children, open air markets, mosques, hospitals, schools. So it doesn't, and they're on the Human Rights Council. Human rights. So U.S. is in favor of Saudi Arabia being on the Human Rights Council, but not in favor of Syria being part of UNESCO, which is, again, the cultural, educational science and cultural organization. Spare me your bullshit. We're so full of shit, it's sickening, man. I mean, the way the U.S. acts on the world stage is embarrassing. And this is why we need systemic reform at the U.N. Because, yes, countries like the United States and all of our allies have way too much power. We just hear, oh, you want to do something that makes sense, like treat Palestine equally and fairly and give facts about Israel like they're occupiers? I guess we're going to take our ball and go home and not give hundreds of millions of dollars that we said we'd give. So, yeah, we need reform at the U.N. Need reform to put, you know, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia and Israel in line and have a more fair system at the U.N. And the irony of a country like ours that we just had a giant fucking torture scandal where we're torturing people and they were innocent people, mind you. We did an illegal war in Iraq. We're currently bombing 7 different countries. Guantanamo Bay is still open where we have an extrajudicial system, no due process, no habeas corpus. The idea that we are somehow the paragon of human rights and that we can call the shots, nobody believes that. Even if you are the biggest, you know, neocon nut sucker on the planet, you don't believe that because you know the facts of what we did. So you know this is a lopsided system and you know it's too biased in our favor and in Israel's favor and in Saudi Arabia's favor. So they think they're owning everybody else. They're just owning themselves because it's just further proof of how hypocritical and pathetic we are on the world scene. Okay. Let's take our final break. Then when we come back, I still have an amazing Russia story for you. And a professor destroys single payer opponent. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
on the Mac, bitches.
Okay, never in the never in the history of the world has there been a wider variety of music played in a short time span. I mean, the difference between this and this, there's not a big, you couldn't find a bigger difference in the world. That's as big of a difference as is possible between two songs. That's funny. Okay. Next one, this might be my favorite story of the day. This next story is meant to be serious, but as you're about to see, it's perhaps the goofiest thing in human history. Russia used Pokemon Go to interfere in the 2016 election. Report. It's almost like people in the mainstream media sat down and said, how do we prove Kyle and all the critics of this story from the beginning 100% correct? How do we do that? And this is what they came up with. It's like an onion story. That's what this is. This is an onion story. Russian-linked campaign used Pokemon Go to meddle in election. All right, hold on. Already pause. Because you guys have to realize the subtleties of critiquing media. First, the tweet was, Russia used Pokemon Go to interfere in 2016 election. Russia used it? What does that mean? It means people in the Kremlin. It means fucking Vladimir Putin. It means the government, the Russian government. Russia used Pokemon Go to interfere in the 2016 election. Then notice a quick sleight of hand move. Then you actually click the link. It's no longer Russia. Now it's Russian-linked campaign. Oh, well, that's fucking interesting. So you see how this game works? All the people who already believe this nonsense about Russia, they'll retweet that and go, see? See? Russia. Russia did it. But then again, you click the link, quick sleight of hand. It went from Russia, so now it's not Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin anymore. Now it's a Russian-linked campaign, which could be fucking anything, right? Well, you're about to see what it is. They say Russian-linked campaign used Pokemon Go to meddle in election. The mobile game app Pokemon Go was reportedly used by a Russian-linked campaign to meddle in U.S. politics. CNN reported that a Russian-linked campaign called Don't Shoot Us, likely run by Moscow-linked troll farm Internet Research Agency, used Pokemon Go, among several other mediums, including Facebook and Twitter, and posed as part of the Black Lives Matter movement. Okay, here we go again. Pause. It goes from Russia used Pokemon Go to meddle in the election, to Russian-linked campaign used it, and then you read on and you find it's Black Lives Matter. What? And I love the way they framed it, too, because they're covering their ass so that they can't get sued for defamation, where they say, CNN reported that a Russian-linked campaign, likely run by Moscow-linked troll farm, You see, this is all the fucking mealy-mouth garbage tiptoeing they gotta do, because it's nonsense. What they're saying is fucking bullshit. Okay, more. The Moscow-linked actors appear to be the source of the campaign that had a goal to raise racial tensions by bringing up incidents of police brutality. What? The campaign posted on its Tumblr page to urge users to play Pokemon Go as part of a contest. It encouraged users to find Pokemon in places where police brutality had happened and then to rename their Pokemon after the victims. Wait. What? Where's even the theoretical, hypothetical, philosophical link here to Russia? Where is it? Where is it? Every story about Russia, oh my God, Russia interfered in the election. And then they all go on to say, which is obviously the reason why Hillary lost is because Russia interfered and basically gave the election to Donald Trump. That is the core of all this Russia hysteria. Is Russia? Russia wanted Trump to win, and the fucking made Donald Trump win. That's what happened. And then every Hillary fucking goes out there, every speech he's given in public. Russia and James Comey and fucking Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. But Russia's the biggest one. Russia. Russia's the fucking problem here. So, and now we're at the point where you get tweets that say, Russia used Pokemon Go to interfere in the 2016 election. That becomes Russia-linked campaign, as opposed to just Russia. Now it's Russia-linked campaign. Then it's Black Lives Matter group, likely run by Moscow-linked. So keep, okay, distance from the original headline and what the argument is. And then finally you read the article. There's not even a theoretical link to, oh, and this is, by the way, why Hillary Clinton ended up getting beaten by Donald Trump, is because they were trying to hand the election over to Donald Trump. They're saying some Black Lives Matter activists, or in their mind, fake Black Lives Matter activists, kept bringing up, used Pokemon Go to remind people that shootings happened of unarmed black people. The fuck does that have to do with Russia? It has nothing to do with Russia. There's no logical connection there. There's no, oh, and that's why these fucking Black Lives Matter people voted for Trump and not Hillary, or that's why Russia flipped the votes to fucking Trump and not Hillary, or that. There's nothing there. There's not even a theoretical thing there. They just, like, wrote the headline and then just vomited on the page and said, hey, there you go. I fucking told you guys, man, from day one, of course this story was complete and utter horseshit. I mean, just at face value, you're going to take the United States of America, a country which is notorious for overthrowing democratically elected governments all around the world, to put in fascist leaders to do the bidding of our corporations. We're going to fucking clutch our pearls and go, ooh, Russia bought Facebook ads to try to swing the election. Should we do war with them? Really? That's what we're going to do? Hillary Clinton, who in the WikiLeaks email said, we should have swung the election in Gaza. We didn't want Hamas to win. We should have interfered. She's all of a sudden going to say, I can't believe people are interfering in our election. You wrote in the emails about how we should have interfered in the Gaza election and overthrown it and put it the other way. And now you're saying it's the biggest crime in history that Russia used maybe Facebook ads, or Russia released WikiLeaks emails, released DNC emails to WikiLeaks that were factual, that showed what we were really doing. And now it's gotten so fucking ridiculous that you're at the point where you say Russia used Pokemon Go to meddle in the election. Pokemon Go. I got news for everybody. Pokemon Go is not a forum within which one has the ability to meddle in an election. That's not a thing the game allows. It's not a thing the forum is privy to. You can't just... What? Russia used World of Warcraft. Russia used Halo to interfere in the fucking election. What does that mean? That doesn't even mean anything. There's not even a theoretical thing that fucking links to the shit you're saying in the goddamn tweet. And they're serious. And there are people who fucking believe this shit. And again, what's the logical, if you believe all the worst fucking version of the story, and what is the worst version of the story? Russia hacked in and changed the votes. By the way, completely preposterous, totally not true. Even when some people went as far to say that, well, guess what? Then a report came out where even U.S. intelligence agencies were like, yeah, that wasn't true. They didn't flip any votes. So, but even if, let's say you believe that worst version of events, that Russia literally hacked into voting machines, flipped votes to Donald Trump, and gave us Hillary Clinton. What do we do? What do we do? What do we remove Donald Trump from office somehow with a court and put Hillary Clinton in? Do we do that? Do we prod Donald Trump to fight a war with Russia because they overthrew a democracy? Is that what we do? What do we do? I'm asking seriously, what do we do? Hashtag the resistance. Here you go. Pokemon Go was used by Russia! You keep fucking blabbering like the giant idiot you are over there in the corner. Just don't go too nuts and start playing with your feces, okay? You just go fuck around in the corner. We will be over here fighting for Medicare for all and free college and a living wage and ending the wars, and we won't be making excuses for the last election. We'll be looking forward to actually get the policies that the American people want implemented, because that's how we beat the Republicans. Not by whining and bitching, but Russia got interfered. That's why Hillary lost. She's a perfect candidate in Russia. And oh my God, they used Pokemon Go. And they stole my fucking Charmander. How did you get my Charmander? I only have a Jigglypuff left.
Oh, God. Okay.
Shut the fuck up, computer.
All right, now let's talk about Medicare for All. Gerald Friedman is an economics professor at the University of Massachusetts, and he went on David Pakman's show and got into the specifics of Medicare for All, and he absolutely decimated its opponents.
Now, you see, the detractors of these systems say, big tax increase, incredibly expensive, it's more promising of free stuff that's not really free. The counter to that would be that it would save much more money than it would cost. So top line, how do we start thinking about those numbers?
Okay, well, the first thing to do is to think about there are actually three different numbers. The first number is what a Medicare for All system would do for the entire U.S. economy versus what we have now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, there are big numbers involved. What we have now are big numbers. 18% of our gross domestic product, 18 cents of every dollar that we produce in this country goes to health care now. Our Medicare for All system would lower that. We would be able to get the same health care for less money. And this is a point on which I think there is almost no disagreement. Critics will admit that, yeah, it would save money on the current healthcare system. It's almost impossible to argue otherwise because Medicare is a more efficient bill payer than the current insurance systems, private health insurance. Medicare doesn't involve the type of marketing or profits that are involved in the current system. Medicare saves money for providers because it's easier for providers to bill a single system than to bill the dozens of insurance companies and hundreds of insurance plans in an average American state. To give you just one quick, easy example to show this, in Toronto General Hospital in Ontario, Canada, with a single payer system, there are two people who do billing in that hospital. Massachusetts General Hospital is about the same size, the same number of beds, more or less, same number of patients. There are 450 people who do billing there. I mean, so you go and save money.
That was a very informative 2 minute or so clip. Yeah, he's breaking it down for you and explaining not only are we going to have savings, here's just one of the ways that we're going to have savings if we move to a Medicare for All system over the current system that we have. But I do have to correct him on one thing. He said, well, there's almost no disagreement over this. Critics will admit that, oh, you're going to save money under a Medicare for All system. Gerald, maybe in your circle with other academics that might be the case. I don't deny that. I don't doubt that for a second. But in popular discourse, not only do you have people disagree with that, you have people that are either so ignorant that they spew misinformation over it unknowingly, or they're just smearing and outright lying about that, and they say the opposite. They say, no, Medicare for All will cost more money. In fact, that's the dominant narrative in the mainstream, is people really believe, no, it'll cost us how we afford it. I don't even know how we afford it. I don't know why I did that, but it was funny. So I'll just give you one example. When Bernie proposed his Medicare for All bill, when he came up with his proposal during the primary, what happened? Well, you had outlets like the Washington Post run articles saying, we can't afford it. How the fuck are we gonna afford it? Bernie, this is fucking $32 trillion over a decade. You want a new $32 trillion entitlement? That's unbelievable. And actually, that's an example of a smear that wasn't even the worst, because the worst ones, what they would do is they would take the cost of our healthcare system that we have now, and then they would add the cost of Bernie's Medicare for All system on top of that, and then they would say the number and go, that's how much it's going to cost. That's just a lie, because what you're saying is we leave our system as it is and we add Bernie's system on top of it. No, the idea is you reform the current system so you just have the cost of Bernie's system. So why are you fucking adding the two numbers? That's preposterous, and that's a lie. But even when they bring up the fear-mongering $32 trillion over a decade point, what they don't tell you is the context, which is what would it cost if we didn't have Medicare for All over that same time period? Answer, $49 trillion. So they say $32 trillion, where are we going to afford $32 trillion? We got $32 trillion, that's $32 trillion, a fucking big new entitlement, Bernie, why fucking do that? So stupid, don't do that, we can't afford it. But you're not saying it would cost $49 trillion if we didn't do it. So really, we can't afford not to do it, because we're going to save $17 trillion over a decade if we do a Medicare for All system. Lower costs, better outcomes. Lower costs, better outcomes, and everybody's covered. We can't afford not to do it. But there's a lot of misinformation out there. And listen, this is why I need the Democrats to be up on their shit. I need you to know these numbers. I need you to know that when they say $32 trillion, you say it would cost $49 trillion if we don't do it, so we're saving $17 trillion. I need you to know those numbers so that every time there's a smear attack from the right, you can beat them back with a stick. Because guess what? That's all they have on the right when it comes to this issue is giant smear attacks. They don't have fucking counterpoints. They have, I'm going to now lie about your plan and mislead everybody and say something that's bullshit. So you have to learn the counterarguments to this. So, he's right. We can't afford not to do a Medicare for All system. And never mind the fact we have hundreds of thousands of medical bankruptcies in the U.S. Medical bankruptcies. Other modern nations have none. That doesn't exist. That concept is foreign because everything is paid for via taxes. Millions of people who aren't insured in the U.S. I mean, the list goes on of just the abysmal, framework of the system we have here. So Gerald Freeman is right, and he makes some great points, and I need Democrats to learn up on all this shit. Okay. All right, I got two more left. Hopefully we can squeeze them in here. Talk about weed. It appears that politicians are finally studying up on marijuana. Look at this. Kentucky governor says he'll never legalize marijuana because of the overdoses. No one has died from a marijuana overdose, of course. I kid when I say they're reading up about marijuana. Of course they're not. Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin appeared on a local radio show this week and called legalized marijuana a sucker's bet and something that will never happen so long as he's in office. Why? Bevin says he's concerned about overdoses. We are not, while I'm governor, going to be legalizing the use of marijuana in this state for recreational purposes or for revenue-generating purposes, Bevin said on Terry Miner's WHAS radio show. There are people overdosing based on ingestion of products that are edibles and things. Wow. Okay, so let's get some facts out there. Number one, there have been no overdose deaths from marijuana, because that's not a thing. You don't die if you ingest too much marijuana. But point number two is, it is true that visits to the emergency room have gone up. There's a couple hundred more per year visits to the emergency room because somebody took an edible and they're like super paranoid and they think they're going to die even though they're not. So there are some emergency room visits as a result of that. Now, that's probably what he's referring to here. But what's stunning is the lack of context, because if he was going to make that argument, hey, we can't, what are we going to do? We're going to legalize it and you have more people showing up to the emergency room because they took an edible and they're paranoid and stuff. If you're going to make that argument, well, guess what? You have to ban alcohol as well. Because not only do people show up to the hospital over alcohol, they actually die as a result of alcohol. You can overdose on alcohol. That's alcohol poisoning. Drink too much and you die. Or many people who drink too much and they show up to the hospital, they have to have their fucking stomach pumped or something like that. So your own argument of, oh, man, people are going to show up to the hospital. What are we going to do here? Are you kidding? We obviously have to not legalize it because there will be downsides. Well, then it's even way worse for alcohol, and you don't want to ban that, so you're being fucking hypocritical. But putting aside that aspect of this, guys, in Colorado, legalized marijuana added roughly 8,005 full-time jobs and about $2.4 billion, $2.4 billion to the state's economy, and the industry is a stronger economic driver than nearly 90% of industries that are active in Colorado. So apart from the freedom angle of this, of like, hey, you should have the right to just put, if you want to get smoke weed and change your consciousness a little bit, you have every right to do that. Apart from that angle of this, there is a fiscal argument for it. There is a businessman. There's a, you know, a business perspective to this, where you can prefer legalization simply for dollars and cents, simply for that reason. But no, of course, with the extreme social conservatives like Matt Bevin in Kentucky, a guy who, by the way, puts together prayer groups to try to deter violent crime. Not a joke. Not a joke. Among guys like that, who are that goofy and that disconnected and that ridiculous in their ideology, the answer is never marijuana. So, the good people of Kentucky, you have all the information you need about Matt Bevin. Please act accordingly. Okay. Rick Wiles is a fundamentalist Christian and a televangelist, and he gave us his brilliant analysis about the chaos that we're currently seeing in the world. This is, of course, from mass shootings to hurricanes and all the tragedies we've seen lately. Let's watch.
Since the beginning of True News, our first broadcast was May 24. We have been telling our audience for 18 and a half years that this world, the governments, the corporations, the media, are controlled at the top. Not everybody that's in those institutions, but at the top, there are people who are avowed satanic, Luciferian, devil worshipers. And I know that sounds extreme and bizarre to people, but every day that goes by, the more I'm convinced that I've been right all these years, that there is a deeply embedded satanic cult that has gained control of powerful institutions in this country and other nations. You can't escape it.
Imagine believing that. Avowed satanic Luciferian devil worshipers. That's who runs the government and the media. The first few times I heard this clip, I thought it was just going to be standard, you know, fundamentalist Christian garbage. Then I listened to it a few times more and I went, oh, no. You know what he's saying, right? I'll repeat it. This world is controlled by this... The government and the media is controlled by avowed satanic Luciferian devil worshipers. Where have we heard that before? The media, the world, are controlled by the Jews. This is the old, you know, the old anti-Semitic move where it's a secret cabal. But now he just got rid of Jews, the word Jews, and he... Avowed satanic Luciferian devil worshipers. So, and look, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's I'm misinterpreting it. Or maybe he's savvy enough to know you just can't say the Jews now. So you say avowed satanic Luciferian devil worshipers. But either way, so let's say for a second, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't know why we do that, though. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say he's not talking about the Jews. And he really believes it's avowed satanic Luciferian devil worshipers. What kind of a person, like, how do you concoct that theory in your mind? Like, oh, I figured it out, guys. Everybody at, like, the UN sits around and they all like hold hands and they do a seance and they turn off the lights and they light a few candles. And then they call on the fucking devil and satanic Luciferian devil worshippers. And isn't that saying the same thing three times? Like Satan is Lucifer. Lucifer is the devil. They're all the same thing. But he just says satanic Luciferian devil worshippers. They all sit around and they all, like, you know, cast mean spells and stuff. If those are the people that control the world, here's a question for Rick Wiles. If those people control the world, like you just said, why wouldn't they nuke everybody right now? I mean, they're avowed satanic Luciferian devil worshippers, right? That means they're basically Satan himself. That's who they call upon. That's who they follow. So don't they just nuke the world? You said the world is run by these people. But they haven't nuked the world, but they could just end it. If that's what, you know, the "Mwahaha, I'm of the devil, I will nuke everybody." Why haven't they done that? Perhaps because your theory is beyond ridiculous. And this is what happens when, you know, ridiculous people look at hurricanes that have gotten stronger as a result of climate change, for example. This is what happens when people look at mass shootings and they go, "What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We can't regulate guns. Can't regulate guns. We can't fucking, you know, try to move towards renewable energy and say, fuck you, the oil companies. So what do we do? I don't know. I'll throw my hands up in the air and say, this is because avowed satanic Luciferian devil worshippers run the world." Well, isn't that a mighty, mighty convenient out where it allows you to scapegoat and then do nothing? Well, listen to this guy. Isn't that crazy? People listen to that and go, nailed it. I loved his rant where he exposed the avowed satanic Luciferian devil worshippers. And I also love how there's now this big, there's this coming together of guys like Rick Wiles, so televangelists and fundamentalist Christians, they're now merging with, like, the Alex Jones types. Alex Jones used to be the, you know, "I'm just the conspiracy guy, but I'm just telling it like it is, exposing the elite Illuminati or whatever." But then after a while, he started becoming more pseudo-religious. And then now you got the religious guys, the fundamentalists, becoming a little more conspiracy-oriented too. And then at the end, they'll be doing a circle jerk where they talk about, "Oh, yeah, isn't it crazy? The frogs are gay and fucking Satan controls the world and stuff. I'm just a straight shooter. That's what I am. Vote Trump." Okay. All right, we're done, baby. We're done for the week. I love all y'all. Come back Monday. You know the deal. Everybody enjoy your weekend. Peace. Mwah.